This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2019, held at Faith Builders from July 29 through August 2.
Because the pen is mightier than the sword, so it can accomplish things that the sword cannot accomplish. The power of writing, if we want to say it a different way, the power of writing is much greater than the power of war and hatred. A war always ends in sufferings and loss, which is what the sword represents, whereas writing is a gift to mankind. So the pen is mightier than the sword because the sword ends in suffering, and the pen is a gift to mankind. My next question is, so if that's what it represents, that's what it means, is that it's stronger, it can accomplish more than the sword does, because the sword brings destruction, the sword brings suffering. Next question is, where did the phrase originate? Where did it come from? Where did we first see that phrase? Couple of things. One of them, the phrase in its pretty much its exact words came about in 1839 when it was invented by a 19th century writer in a play. That's when we see that exact phrase. But that's not where the idea started. It shows up in Cicero. When he says, in translation, he says, arms give way to persuasion. Persuasion, the pen, mightier than the sword. Okay. So Cicero, back in B.C., 44 B.C., has kind of the same idea. The one that you may be thinking of is one that I think we're all familiar with in Hebrews 4:12. The word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword. And if you look at the dates of those, you recognize that when that is written in Hebrews, it was not a new idea. Cicero is before that. And so it comes, it's something that, a phrase that they may have been familiar with, something that comes from before. Third question that I have is why is the pen mightier than the sword? And I kind of mentioned some of that already, but why is it mightier than the sword? The pen represents language. The sword represents violence, destruction. Armies can be mighty. They can conquer countries. But language spreads ideas. And ideas motivate people. With swords, you can limit what people can do. You can restrict their behavior. But with the pen, you change how they think. And I think as teachers, we look at our classroom and changing the way our students think about something gets a much better response than enforcing rules. You can change the way they think. And writing has changed the way people think. Karl Marx wrote a book on communism that drastically impacted the entire world and our political systems in the world today. Blackbeard, another example. His reputation preceded him so much that just the sight of his flag was enough to make his victims surrender without ever a shot being fired. And how did they know about that? How did they know about Blackbeard? Newspaper articles. And as soon as they recognized his flag, they gave up immediately. Merchant ships would just give up because they had read about him. It was mighty in their writing. They feared ever coming across him. Harriet Beecher Stowe, Uncle Tom's Cabin. Abraham Lincoln allegedly called Harriet Beecher Stowe the little lady who started the big war, because her writing had an influence. Her writing had an effect. The book was included in the Library of Congress's list of books that shaped America and has been called the most influential novel ever written by an American. And of course, one last one. What has ever been more powerful than the Bible? The written word. Sacred text brought Christianity to the world and has served as a source of inspiration for millions of people. It's the most translated and the most frequently purchased book in the world. It's influential. So, a sword is powerful. It can take a person's life. It can enforce order. But ideas are more powerful, because they inspire millions of men to a specific action. They inspire the action. But not all written work is powerful. Not all has a positive effect. Graffiti in a public restroom demonstrates that the power is dependent on the mind of the possessor. Is graffiti on a wall effective? Maybe. Is it powerful? Maybe. But it may not be. What we write is really a part of who we are. And it is dependent on the mind. It is dependent on what we have inside. But how can we get the thoughts that are inside our brains onto our paper? How do we learn to express those things? And this workshop, or this breakout session, is in trying to help us to make our writing more effective, mightier, and how to make our students' writing more effective, mightier. And so how do we make the pen mightier than the sword? How do we make that happen? And the first point that I have, and I'm not sure what you're expecting from this, but a couple of things that I think are important that we have to start with, a basis that we need to start with. And number one is read everything you can. And teach students to read everything they can. Reading improves, and you don't need to write everything down here. I don't think I gave you room to write everything, but reading improves our comprehensions for a subject. Reading improves our vocabulary. Reading improves our concentration. Reading exposes us to different writing styles. And read. Read different things. Don't always read the same kind of thing. Branch out into different subjects and encourage your students to branch out into different subjects. You may get them hooked on reading with one particular kind of book. Some people fall in love with biographies. And they get started reading by reading about real people, about biographies, through biographies. And have them branch out into other subjects eventually. We need to branch out into different genres, different types of writing. Different genres. Different worldviews. And I teach high school. One of my goals in teaching high school English is that my students learn to read with an ability to to read something that they don't agree with and to pick that out with discretion, with discernment. And I don't expect them to just read things that they agree with and just read things that are even Christian. And I intentionally assign, like this year, I'll be teaching American literature this year, and I will intentionally give them Emerson without a whole lot of introduction. And they read about, living simply. Simplify, simplify, simplify. And they come back to class and I say, so what do you think? And I get some response from them, and some of them hate it. They think, oh, this guy's, that was dumb. That was just terrible. And others think, oh, this is really great. Oh, I like this. I like his idea. But then we start looking at his philosophy, and what does he really mean? What does he really mean by what he says? And we start looking at his worldview and at his philosophy, and they start looking at it completely different from what they did when they first read it. And that's what I want. I want to expose them to things that they better not agree with. And they may at first agree with it. They may think, oh, this is good. But I want to teach them to look behind what's there, behind what's on the page. Peanuts cartoon from a long time ago, and I wish I had kept it, but I didn't. All it is what's in my memory. And one of the characters, I don't even remember which one it was, had this book and was holding it up. And then holding it like you, well, holding like you normally hold the book, and then holding it up, putting it down on the floor, trying to read this, and the last screen is the only one that had any words, and it said, no matter how hard I try, I just can't read between the lines. What I want to do is teach my students to read between the lines. What's behind this? What is behind it? Because anything that we write, there is something behind it. Okay. Anything we write, there's something behind it. Our own philosophy comes out in what we write. What we believe comes out in what we write. Expose them to different things. Expose them to different types of writing. You'll find that your students who read a lot, who like to read, and read always carrying a book around, they're always in the process of reading something. They are the students who are going to be able to concentrate the best. They are the students who are going to have the largest vocabulary. And this last year, I had a student who asked another student in a creative writing class, how do you think of words like that? And he said, I don't know. I guess because I read. That's exactly right. The one that thought of all of these creative words was the one who is always reading a book. Always. He's always carrying an extra book around. If he has a couple of minutes, he's reading. The other one doesn't. Improves our concentration, I have up there. Reading improves our concentration. A person who can read well may get involved in what he's reading and is not even aware of things that are going on around him. I had another student this year who said that his brother was like that. And so they did a test on the brother. He was sitting there reading a book. And his mom said, do you want some candy? No response. She walked a little bit closer to him. Do you want some candy? Absolutely no response. He's still reading. She gets right next to him and asks him again, do you want some candy? No response. And finally, she tapped him on the shoulder and asked him, "What?" He had no idea that she had said a word to him before. Concentration. A lot of concentration. So number one, read everything that you can. Variety. Obviously, all of us are probably going to find the thing, and our students too, will find the thing that they really enjoy, the kind of writing that they really enjoy. Okay. The interesting thing is that whatever kind of writing you enjoy reading, when you start writing, that's what it's going to look like. That's what it's going to sound like, because it's what you've read. So if you start reading any particular writer, be careful what you read lots of, because when you start writing, that's what it's going to sound like. That's the kind of writing you'll think of. I know a writer who read numerous times everything that Christmas Carol Kaufman wrote. And when she started writing herself, it's the same kind of thing. Same kind of books. So, encouragement to read. Use a little discernment about what you read lots of. Second one, my second point is observe everything you can. Observe everyday things. And teach your students to observe everyday things. A little bit of that was in the general session over here of teaching students to recognize things that God created. Take a short mindfulness break. Just stop what you're doing and think about what you see, what you hear, what you smell, textures that you feel. Just stop for a moment. Exactly, what am I seeing? What am I hearing? What am I smelling? What are the textures that I feel? Observe an object. Take a flower, take a leaf, take a stone, take any object, and just examine it in detail. I remember somewhere between 5th grade and 8th grade, I was riding to school with my uncle, who, there were three of our families that traveled together to school. And one day on the way home from school in the afternoon, my uncle was driving and he did some artwork. And it was in the fall, and we were driving this back road, and we came to a dead stop in the middle of the road. And he got out of the car and stood there with his hands on his hips looking at this tree. And he was from Berks County, so a little bit of a Dutch accent. Stood there looking at the tree, just gazing at that tree for a while. And he said, "Now isn't that a pretty tree?" Stood there and looked at it. Turned around, got back in the car, and off we went again. I am sure that there is a painting somewhere that has that tree in it because he observed it. And when we want to describe something in writing, we need to know what that thing really looks like. We need to know what it looks like. We need to know what it feels like. Because the more senses you can include in something that you're writing, a description, the better off you are. So focused observation. Focus on something. Observe the idiosyncrasies of something. Everyday things. Some people know exactly who's coming down the steps by the way they walk. Can you make somebody else hear the same thing? Can you describe it? in the way they walk. Some people know that when you start hearing the locusts, it's about time for school to start. Okay. Little things. Make connections. Make associations. Certain way that a person swings a bat in softball. How the person prepares to bump a volleyball. What are the movements? What does it look like? You may not describe in detail when you're writing. You may not describe all those little details, but it should be enough of them that the person reading it gets the picture. Number three is learn to use story starters or prompts to inspire you, and use them with your students. Story prompts. And I put a few of them on your handout, I think. I think that's what comes next. I'm not sure where my copy of my handout got to, but anyway. Oh, you have one there? Here it is. I have a couple of them here. Six of them? Story starter. Let's say this is your first sentence in what you're going to write. He looked into the distance. There was smoke coming out of the chimney. What's your question about that? What are some questions? If you're going to use that as the beginning of the story, what do you want to know?
Where is he?
Where is he? Okay, where is he?
Is he alone?
Is he alone?
What is he looking at?
What's he looking at? He looks into the distance.
Has he been by himself for a long time?
Okay. Has he been by himself for a long time? And here is smoke coming out of the chimney. There's somebody else there. Okay. Who is he? Where is he? Why is he where he is? Okay. All those things are things that you want to know. Let's go to the second one. The envelope looked as though it had been in the post for years. The writing was faded. What do you want to know about this one?
Who is it addressed to?
Okay, who is it addressed to?
Where is it now?
Where is it? No.
What it says.
What does it say? What's the message in it? Reminds me of the poem, how they brought the good news from Ghent to Aix, and you never find out what the good news was. It's the whole story of how it gets there, but you never know what the good news was. My students always say, well, what was the good news? Well, we don't know. We are never told.
The style of writing.
What, okay, the style of writing.
Who's looking at it? Who's looking at it?
Okay, who is looking at it? Is it the person who was supposed to be receiving it, or is it someone else? All kinds of things. Third one. He bent over to catch his breath and stretch his back. At that moment, he decided to face it. He was tired of running.
Why was he running?
Why was he running? Yep. Why was he running? Okay.
What was he running from?
What's he running from?
Where is he running to?
And where was he planning to go? Is this Jonah going to Nineveh? You know, not wanting to go to Nineveh?
Was he actually running, or was it just mentally running?
Good question. Was he literally running, or was it just mentally running? Okay. Well, he is catching his breath, but yeah. Could be just mental. A couple more. He picked up the key and slipped it into his pocket. Sure, nobody had seen him.
Had someone seen him?
Had someone seen him. Okay.
Why doesn't he want someone to see him?
What's the key for?
What's the key for? The sudden movement of the bus jolted her awake. She wasn't sure where she was.
Why was she on a bus?
Okay, why is she on a bus? What kind of bus was it?
How long had she been on the bus?
How long had she been on it? Okay. A tiny garden and a freshly painted door made the house look welcoming and cared for. Okay, who lives behind the door? So, when I use these in class, I do what we've done here and take a couple of sentences like this, kind of setting a stage for something, and look at some questions. So, who was it? What's the situation? All of that. Now, you have some empty space there somewhere below those things. What I want you to do is to pick one of them and start writing a story for it. Right now. I'll give you just a couple of minutes. I'm not expecting a full-length story, a big long thing, okay? But get started with the beginning of a story. And if you want to change a pronoun or you want to change a word here or there, go ahead. That's fine. Okay. Do I have any volunteers to read what you've written?
What was the scary part?
Of course, we recognize this is very rough draft, right? Any volunteers? Good.
He picked up the key and slipped it into his pocket. Hopefully no one had seen him. He'd been so careful this time, surely they hadn't followed him. Unless somehow Bart had caught him. Bart always managed to find the most wanted men, no matter how careful they were.
Okay. Anyone else?
He bent over to press his breath and stretched his back. For that moment, he decided to face it in his prior grimace. So he stood up. Oh, he knew that the moment had come to acknowledge the truth. So he stood up and slowly started walking back in the direction he came. His heart beating faster with each step he took. His mind racing with all the scenarios of what may happen when he reveals to his friend the truth.
Okay. Okay. Was it easier to get started because I gave you a couple of sentences than if I had just said, start writing a story? It's easier to start with something. Okay? And so a couple of sentences like that can help to get a writer started. If you want to develop your own writing, it's a good thing to do fairly often, is just use a story starter like that and write. It's an easy way to get your students into writing, to give them something to start with. Because the hardest thing about getting started is deciding what you're going to write. And if you have a couple of sentences to get started, it takes away a little bit of that. Some of you may have even had trouble deciding which one of the six you were going to do. Mm-hmm. And some of you, one of them just kind of jumped out as, that's the one, you know, that's what I'm going to do. Okay. So that's one thing that you can do in classes. Give them some things like that.
Do you require them to start with those sentences?
No. A lot of times what I do, I told you here, start with that, because I wasn't wanting you to write very much. But a lot of times what I do is give them something like this and say they have to work that in somewhere. And they can change the wording, but they can work it in somewhere. It can be the beginning of the story. It can appear in the middle somewhere. It can be the ending. Like that one about running. That could be the end. you could have all of the story of what happened before, and then he decides, I'm gonna stop running. And that's the end of the story. Yeah. I usually allow them to put it anywhere they want to. They can use that, or they should use that somewhere, or at least use that idea. They may change the words, but use that idea somewhere. Beginning, middle, end, anywhere they want to work it in. That frees them, too, to do whatever story they want. Sometimes, rather than giving them sentences, sometimes they'll give them a picture. And it may be a picture, I have one that it's rabbits, and the mother rabbit has made these pies and has them on the windowsill. And you see these, there's obviously an empty space on the windowsill, and you see these two little rabbits running off into the distance. And then I have them write the story. And they can use that picture. It has to be based on the picture, but that picture can appear anywhere in the story. It's another way of getting them started, doing some writing. So that's one. That's one, story starters. Another one that I use sometimes is to rewrite a famous story. Take a story that they are familiar with. Take a story they're familiar with and have them rewrite it. Tuesday, the workshop that I had on Pilgrim's Progress, one of the things that I said was modernize the story. Have them modernize the story. Just last night, I drive a little smart car because I'm in the parking lot, and somebody suggested to me last night that I rewrite the Pilgrim's Progress where he's traveling in a smart car. Because I said I felt a little sorry for my car coming up Nittany Mountain, coming up to the top of the mountain. Felt a little bit sorry for those little three cylinders. But anyway, so pick a story that they are familiar with and modernize it, an old story. Modernize it. Choose a recent story and change the time period. Set it back in history somewhere. A little tricky to do because you have to make sure that the names that you use were names that were used in that time period. You have to make sure that the things that they have were things that were actually in that history period. Okay? One of my objections, and I forget now what it was. Just off the top of my head, I didn't think about this when I was getting ready, but one of my objections to some of the Jeanette Oak books is that she has, I forget the kind of fabric it is, but she has some fabric that was not discovered for another 100 years. But it's in the book. Okay. So, a little bit different. A little bit difficult to do sometimes to get it accurate is to write a historical fiction, you know, and have everything like it would have been in that time period. But it is a fun thing for them to do sometimes. Choose a story and write it from a different perspective. Maybe I should have brought it along, but the story of the Three Little Pigs written from the wolf's perspective. Any of you see that book? The true story of the Three Little Pigs, written from the wolf's perspective. You can take any story like that and write it from a different character's perspective. So what's it like from this person's perspective? So take an old story, rewrite it. Take a recent story, set it in history. Take a story, write it from a different perspective. Choose a story and write a new ending. Change the ending of the story. Or, if it's a story like The Lady or the Tiger, write an ending for it. There's a story that was in our old lit books. It was a secular book and we no longer use them, but called August Heat. And this man was walking along. He came to this guy who was, you know, doing the engraving on a tombstone because he was getting this ready for a tombstone convention of some sort. And what he sees is his name and his birthday. And the engraver was working on that day's date. And he asked him, so where did you get that name? And he said, oh, just first thing that came to my mind. How did you decide what date to put on there? I just thought of it. And then he told him, that's my name, and that's my birthday. And he said, well, what about the other date? And so he decided that it wasn't safe to go home because all kinds of accidents can happen on the road, you know? So he just stayed right with the guy, the engraver invited him to come home with him. And he's writing this story, and the heat is stifling. And that's where the story stops. So I got my students to finish the story. Give me an ending to the story. And they would have all these, you know, endings of the stories, and usually he survived, you know, whatever. But there was one girl who wrote an ending to the story that it was so hot, it was stifling hot, and so he decided to go get a shower. And he discovers that the shower is filling up with water. And he can't open the door. The door's locked. And he can't turn the water off. And she stopped her story at 11:59. He's standing on his tiptoes in the shower, and just his nose is out of the water. And she stopped. I said, you still didn't end the story. But you do have to be a little bit careful, too, because my nephew was writing a story for Bible class about Jericho, and they could pick whoever they wanted to in Jericho. Well, he picked this little guy who was running around in the city of Jericho. Well, what happens to everybody who's running around in the city of Jericho? It's only the ones in Rahab's house who survived, right? And so he didn't know quite how to finish his story, and so his last sentence in the story was, and so the next morning I woke up dead. Endings of stories, you can write it, you can have them write an ending of, he was a fifth grader, okay. You can have them write an ending of the story, but there are some cautions. Okay. His mother is a writer, and so he gave his story to her and said, so what do you think of my story? And she said, well, I think you need to work on your endings a little bit, but it was a good story, but you need to work on the endings. So you can do that. Write a new ending to a story. You can choose a story and write chapter 2. Pick it up and write the sequel for it. Right? What happens next? You ever read a book before you go to bed at night and you're really at an interesting place? And you go to bed and the next day you pick up the book again and some stuff didn't here. Oh, yeah, because you dream the next chapter, and when you get to pick up the book again, it doesn't fit with what you had been dreaming. You know, and sometimes that dream chapter is pretty weird, but anyway, so you can write a second chapter. You can write part 2. Write part 2. Number 5, and this one is one that I think is very important, is critique the work of others. Anytime we are reading, whatever we are reading, I think we need to be critiquing it. And teach our students to critique the work of others. I said one of my purposes in teaching literature is to expose them to different kinds of reading and to learn to read with discretion. What you need to do whenever you are reading is to analyze the point the writer is making. Read between the lines. What is the point that the writer is making? What's behind it? What is behind it? What's the point? And then analyze analyze how the writer makes that point. And if you're getting your students to critique each other's writing, one of the things that they need to learn to do is to think about how could this point be made better? How could this person get the point across better? What doesn't quite make sense? Or what is kind of like, oh, okay. Or how could you say it that it really grabs the attention and makes it strong? Are there better ways of saying the same thing? Analyze your reaction to the point. Analyze your reaction to the point. How did I react to that point? Think about it. How did I react to the point? Did I agree with that? Did I disagree with it? Did it make me angry? How did I react to it? And I'll put the last point up here that I have for that one, but imitate writers that you admire. Their word choice, their sentence structures, their way of putting things together. Imitate those. Teach your students to identify what is good about a story and what needs work. And older students can probably do that better than younger students. But what do you like about the story? In my creative writing class, we spend a lot of time critiquing the stories that they've written. And when we begin, we have a student read a story. He doesn't read his own story. We have somebody else reading it to the class. And then I ask them for a general response to that story. A good story, an okay story, just a general response. And then the next step is to look for specific things that are good in the story. And even if it is a terrible story, you can always find something that is good. Always. Even if the only thing that you can find good is that, with high school students, is that he typed it instead of hand wrote it. And you can at least read it. Okay? That might be a good thing. But I push them to come up with two things that are good about a story. And that's first. That's first. Two things that are good. And then we go to looking at, so what could he improve in here? What could she improve in this story? And we spend most of the time on that. And then at the end of critiquing it, I ask them again for something good. And so we kind of sandwich the criticism between two good things, all the things that need changed, and something good. Something good. Good dialogue. Good emotion that is shown. But not too melodramatic. Okay? Don't worry. Too much. Is it realistic? And if you have a student who likes to write things that are a bit in the world of fantasy, it's okay. But be sure that they learn to take you from reality into fantasy. Before you get to the end of the story, they'd better bring you back to reality. You never leave somebody in fantasy land. You must bring them back. And so I'll let them write that kind of thing. They can write things that are very fantastical. But they always have to bring us back to reality. And that's one of the things that I'll say when we're critiquing is, I'm still stuck in fantasy land here. You have to bring us back. Think of Alice in Wonderland. What happens at the end of the story? She comes back into reality. Take any of those. Narnia, Chronicles of Narnia, Lion, Witch, and Wardrobe. They go into the wardrobe, but they've got to come back out of the wardrobe at the end of the book. Okay? You cannot leave them in fantasy land. You have to bring them out. And some students love writing that kind of thing. Some hate it. Okay? I kind of allow them to do it if they want to, but not always. Sometimes I tell them, no fantasy on this one. Okay. So teaching them to make it, I'm going to review some of the things and add a few more things, but read a variety of authors, of publishers, of genres, critique things that you personally read. And your students should know that you do that. That you think about what they've said, what's behind what they've said, and how they've said it. I have a friend who reads a lot faster than I do and reads a lot more than I do because she can read faster. But she doesn't stop and think about how did they put that paragraph together? Oh, is that sentence? That structure of that sentence. You know, this using this word here. She just reads. She knows the story when she's done, but she hasn't spent any time thinking about how it's written, and that slows me down. Okay, it's going to slow you down if you start doing that kind of thing while you're reading. Do some writing yourself, and I think it is a good idea for your students to know that you're working on writing something. And that you struggle with expressing things the way you want it. Demonstrate critiquing with your students. Take a piece and critique it together. In my creative writing class, I put them into groups and have them critiquing each other's stories sometimes, but I never do that right away. We critique a lot of them together first. We read a story, we critique it, we look at it, we examine how they've said it, how they could say it better, and I demonstrate how to do that. And then, as we work through the semester, I can put them in groups and have them do the same thing. And we go through a set of manuscripts much faster because we're doing four at a time instead of one at a time, 16 people, one at a time. Had 16 in creative writing this last year. So I think it was 16, something like that. So demonstrate critiquing. Demonstrate writing with your students. Talk about how you come up with an idea. Talk about how you get started. And it is perfectly acceptable to not start with the introduction to something. I've talked mostly about story writing, but essays, research papers, all of those things are writing that, particularly those nonfiction things, those essays, research papers. If I have a student who's struggling getting started, I'll say, skip the introduction. Start with the first paragraph after that. Start with your first point. You can always write the introduction later. And it actually works pretty well to write the introduction and the conclusion together after you've written everything else. Because you've worked through what all is going to be in the paper, come back and write your introduction, then that introduces what ends up being in the paper. Write your conclusion that is what ended up in the paper. Okay. Demonstrate that for them. Show them how to do that. Be ruthless with the red pen in your own writing. Critique what you do yourself ruthlessly. But it's hard to do because that's your brainchild. And it's like, you're afraid you're going to be guilty of abortion because it's your child and you're going to kill it before it ever gets birthed. But be ruthless with the pen in your own writing. It's going to make your writing better, and it'll help you in teaching your students to write better. You'll know what kinds of things to look for. But don't be so ruthless with theirs. Okay? Because you'll discourage them. So, yes, red pens or whatever color you use are necessary. But it has to be a little gentler than what you are with your own. Okay? Demonstrate rewriting, revising, and editing with your students. Show them how it is done, rather than just expecting them to do it, because some students, even in high school, will think that rewriting means that I just make a nicer copy of it. Word for word, like the other one was. It just looks nicer. No, that's not rewriting. Some students think that. Some students think that's the way it is. So I think if we do all of those things, I think if we do all of those things with our students as we find time in our busy schedules to do them, our writing and the writing of our students is going to be more powerful. And I think we can have, with our writing, we can have an impact on our world. And we need to have a positive impact on our world. And it's very possible. It's very possible. One of the goals for my creative writing class, I've mentioned the creative writing class a couple of times here. One of my goals for that creative writing class is that in that class, they learn to write something and they learn to send it to a publisher. And my goal is always that one out of 15 or 16, however many students I have in class, sometimes 21, one of those students actually gets something published. And I tell them it's the only class, all the way through school, it's the only class that they can get paid for taking. Because if they get something published, they get paid for it. It's the only class in high school, well, all the way through school, you actually get paid for doing it. Usually we have at least one. Usually we have at least one. So, any questions that you have?
Do you have students like after you grade, do you require them to rewrite it after you grade it, like to have a final, a perfect copy or a correct copy, whatever it's?
Depends what I'm working on. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I'll look at something and make some markings on it and give it back to them and have them do it now that I've looked at it, rewrite it again. I don't have time to do that often because I typically am working with somewhere in the range of 80 to 90 students in a day's time. So I don't always have, I can't do 90 papers a week and then have them rewrite it and do 90 plus the first copies of whatever. So it varies. With a lot of the compositions that I have my students do, what I've gone to for sophomores and juniors and seniors, I don't do it with the freshmen, but sophomores, juniors, and seniors in the lit class, I have them write a composition every week based on the literature that we're doing. Or almost every week. And they do just the first draft. Okay? They turn that in as the first draft. I glance at it. I don't read the whole thing, but I glance at it. I look for the
thesis, I look for topic sentences, and I don't necessarily read every sentence all the way through. But it's supposed to be about a page. It's supposed to be five paragraphs, typically. And I check them off as they turned in the first draft. The next week, they're doing another one, and they usually have three or four choices they may pick from that have something to do with one of the stories that we've read and lit. After they've done two or three rough drafts, I have them choose one of those. They can choose the one that they liked the best, and then they rewrite that one and do a final copy of that one. Okay. So they are writing every week, but I'm actually only thoroughly grading one every 3 weeks or something like that. Okay. Cuts down on my paperload. The other 90 students, I do have significant paperload. I don't know that's the best way, but it's one of my survival techniques. So they're still writing a lot, but I'm not grading every paper. And they can pick the one that they like the best. At first, I wasn't collecting them at the end of every rough draft. Then I had them cramming, quickly writing a couple of paragraphs just before they turned in the final draft of the one that they really wanted, It wasn't doing what I wanted. And so I started collecting rough drafts every time. Okay. Anything else? Okay. Thank you for participating. And as I said, my other two workshops, if you have any suggestions that you want for workshops, please put it on your evaluation form and let the committee know. What they asked me to do was one on literature, one on grammar, and one on writing. And it's kind of like I need a starter sentence, to get me started. Something to start with, rather than one on writing. You're dismissed.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.